Thank you.
The title of the lecture is Clearing Possibilities of. Now, you can just relax now because none of this data will be of any use to you. It's highly speculative. What could man amount to could be another title for this lecture. What could a man amount to, or man? There are many entrance points to the question, and all of them are philosophic in the extreme. A man goes around worrying about a great many things. And we could classify these things under ontology or epistemology or give them some resounding philosophic terminology. And we would yet have what bricklayers, janitors, Cambridge dons are like worried about. Housewives, almost anybody. They worry approximately about the same things. Philosophy comes along and defines it rather resoundingly and with considerable window dressing and dunnage, but it all amounts to the same thing. Our case that isn't making progress has yet to find out one thing, that it could be better, or that there is anything wrong with it. That sounds very funny, but basically, most intimately, a case that doesn't make progress does not know wherein it is erring. It lacks an objective viewpoint of the conduct or constitution of self. Do you follow that?
Yes.
In other words, we're pounding somebody who doesn't know his crime to some degree. We're pushing at somebody who is not aware of anything being wrong, and he doesn't quite know what he's being pushed about. Anything he does is apparently quite correct from his viewpoint. But that's the trouble. Now, we try to move him off of this viewpoint onto another viewpoint, and he considers it an abandonment of self. He has lost himself to such a degree that to find himself requires the abandonment of some tailor-made self. And this tailor-made self, a valence, a composite, has been found to meet in past ages many emergencies. It is just that personality which measures up every time and fills the bill. So you have a personality or a self, which is really a false self, which is unfortunately a solution to many, many, many ages of problems. A little girl who cries and is very petulant and is very helpless and put upon and so forth. She actually doesn't look at herself in that wise at all. She looks at this self as the perfect answer. It is measured up as the perfect answer in many times, places, kinds. That's the perfect answer this self is. And how do you lead a successful life is the question answered by any valence. That's something for an auditor to remember. How do you lead a successful life? What is the most successful beingness that could be adopted? And therefore, we get survival, which is, of course, continuance. And naturally, the most successful self that continues life itself has continuance to such a degree that its destruction or its betterment becomes very, very difficult. You see how that would be. The continuance of self. That's the basic problem that is being answered by a counterfeit self. And this little girl who's petulant and who's very helpless and so forth has found this to be an optimum solution. And it is so optimum, such a workable solution, has gained so many points in so many directions over so many ages, that to shake this one aside is almost on a very, very successful valence, is almost an impossibility short of excellent auditing and excellent processes. It has to be very clever auditing. It has to be very deft. Now, why is this? The self, obviously, from every other viewpoint but the first dynamic, is a total failure. Obviously, to one and all, this is a failure. This petulant, helpless, stupid little girl. It's a total flop. She can't get married, she can't stay married, she can't take care of her family, she can't take care of herself. She's always getting left in the lurch. From another viewpoint, this was a highly unsuccessful beingness. But the first dynamic viewpoint has as its principal aberration that it is the best possible beingness for all given situations. This person isn't looking for better answers. This person is looking for the justification of adopting that self and continuing it. Now it becomes a contest between the first dynamic and other viewpoints and other dynamics. And this can become a very interesting philosophic enigma all by itself. Why does a person who is obviously failing continuously, consecutively, and forevermore, why is a person who does that so unwilling to assume any different, better personality? That's the first one. What does a person have to achieve before a better personality is there? What does have to be achieved? Very interesting. The idea has to occur that there is something slightly non-survival about this non-survival self. You might say a divine doubt must be entered into the situation. Before one can achieve a betterment, one has to have the ability to view or question. Now, the bricklayer and all the rest of the people around, people who are not educated, people who might be very clever themselves. These people particularly are up against constant and continual worries which they themselves do not articulate, but which are articulated for them in philosophy. That's very interesting to me. They are really all worried about the same thing, but they don't quite view what they are worried about. Actually, their conflict is how to assume a winning valence when a losing valence is aberratedly believed to be a very winning self. Here is a conundrum. Why should they assume any other valence? But they should assume some other valence, because the valence they happen to be using is not the valence really which is winning, but it is the valence which will win. And the reason they have to have the valence they have is so they can win, but lo and behold, it's the only reason they're not winning. And what a tremendous amount of objective view is required by a person to sum up what would actually win. Maybe all of this could be headed up under just the subject of trust. What valence could be trusted to win? Or, much more importantly, how much trust could a person have in himself? Because obviously these people aren't wearing themselves. They aren't being themselves. They aren't wearing themselves. You find them actually, as they are audited, processing something else. That's fascinating, isn't it? They're processing something else. They are not being audited. They are sitting back here in a detached view, not really observing, but quite detached. And when the auditing command comes in, they apply it to something else. You could say that they are stuck in propositions of trying to better the other fellow without themselves being reached. You could say that they are in a situation where nothing that is said applies to them, that they, centuries or ages ago, picked up a valence that they couldn't have any effect on, and it seemed to be a continuously survival valence that had tremendous impact on the environment, some psychotic or something like that, apparently had great impact on the environment, and they are still continuing a dramatization of trying to have an effect upon that self that they tried to have an effect upon. In other words, they're trying to go on having an effect on the thing which they did try to have an effect on. They're stuck in that exact situation, which gives us just a total dramatization. You're trying to audit the person. The person is trying to have an effect on valence X, and has been trying to have an effect on valence X in all the intervening centuries. Anyone who shows up similar to valence X is something that they will attack to try to have an effect upon it. And what they present the auditor with is valence X, hoping he can have an effect upon it. At no time are we auditing the PC. We're auditing valence X. Well, the PC couldn't have any effect on valence X. And if the PC is taking every auditing command and applying it to valence X, which is apparently the perfect survival valence, because nothing can have any effect on it at all. Their definition of a perfect survival valence, you see, is something on which no effect could be had at any time by anybody, anywhere. And if they're applying all of these auditing commands to valence X, the case doesn't make any progress at all, does it? Because what's their case? Their case is valence X. They aren't even in the running. This is what you call a beingness fixation. A fixation upon a beingness. And any effort on the part of the auditor to change the aberrated beingness on the PC is, of course, cooperated with very wholeheartedly by the PC, and both of them are more or less seen to be attacking this unassailable total no-effect valence. And they can have a good time. They can go round and round and round and round. And every once in a while, the PC skids. Makes a mistake. Answers the auditing command himself. Skips. Slides. Shifts the incident. Shifts the beingness. Gets into some other state of mind with regard to beingness. And looks around and says, what is this new strange universe in which I find myself? This gives us very numerous oddities. One of these oddities is man apparently is fighting himself. Apparently this is what he's doing. Man apparently continuously fights himself. You ask anyone the auditing question, invent a self to fight. That's just a research question. Invent a self to fight. They come up rather smartly. They're rather sudden in the number of cells they'll present. And at first glance, it's apparent, you see, that the individual is simply a fighting animal and that all nature is dedicated to combat and fightingness, and that a split personality is two personalities fighting each other and all manner of balderdash. An individual gets so fixated on attacking a something, gets so tremendously fixated on attacking something, that he thinks that's life. He said, well, that's it. That's the way you live. The survival valence is something that attacks something. Therefore, if we attack everything in the environment and destroy everything we put our hands on, we will, of course, survive, obvious QED. And that is the way to go about it. The problem of how we produce low-scale likingness, low-scale affection, low-scale this and that, the problem of producing it, how it is produced, and so forth, has been an aberrated study of man's for a very long time. He wanted to produce this low-scale affection or likingness or something. Oh, Freud had names for it. Most 19th-century students of the subject had names for it. Freud, I think, called it thraldom, the production of thraldom, amongst other things. There is such a thing as actually liking something. You see, that's way upscale. Actually liking something, the ability to like something, the ability to please or be pleased. That's way upscale. Now, downscale, the way people try to produce that is to beat each other up, punish, threaten. Every now and then you run into a cycle that the moment you stop beating them up or knocking them around, they don't like you anymore. But as long as you're knocking them around, why, they apparently are quite fond of you. Well, an interesting case in point on a tribal revolt. The only people the tribe was able to bring itself to attack was people who had, in essence, been kind to the tribe. You see, they had mistaken this level, and they thought, well, the way to get more being kind to us is to attack and kill the people who were kind to us. You get this type of reasoning. You take the belly to the ground, quote, devotion, unquote, of a dog with a broken spirit and so forth, a typical 1-1 dog and so forth. Why, he'd probably be the first to dine upon the corpse of his departed master. But whole societies, the Germanic society was very good at this. They thought force. Force produces affection. And there's another society at this time, the Russian society, that is saying two great forces, when they meet, force each other into liking each other. I think that's something other. They've got a philosophy called dialectic materialism. It was abandoned in civilized nations some thousands of years ago, but has been picked up rather more recently by this childish idiocy called communism. By the way, very few people realize that communism is not a Russian invention. It's a German invention, and almost 100 years ago was totally abandoned by the Germans as being so silly that nobody paid any attention to it. Now the Russians bring it back into Germany and say, you must believe this stuff. Germans invented it. But force, all these philosophies that are built around force. How to get the love of your fellow man. Strangle him, of course. Beat him. These are all the factors involved in brainwashing. If you're mean enough to prisoners, they will eventually join your cause. You don't believe that? That's actually how they make people like them. They beat them up. That's a very low-scale, psychotic band on the tone scale. Very, very low scale. That's psychotic. But a psycho knows how to get you to like him. that is just abuse you and abuse everything about you and abuse all of your possessions and mess up the whole environment. And if he does all that thoroughly enough, eventually you like him. Honest. That's the way they think about it, if you call it think. That's a basic animalistic low tone scale, hardly off the bottom, forget the last minute, never know that there's another minute coming, sort of a survival ha activity. You find this sort of thing amongst prostitutes occasionally and so forth. They won't go around with a man unless he beats them. They reserve the right to cut the throat of any man they love. You see, the whole thing is in a mishmash, twisted situation. They cannot view the fact that there is any ceiling above this. And that is basically what is wrong with that animalistic level of existence and endeavor. They cannot see that there is anything else. Nothing else exists. Now, you take somebody who's totally fixated on a valence, which is a very non-survival valence. His total fixation on the valence limits his ability to realize that anything else could exist. He has not found out that there are questions he does not have answers for. And if you ask him some of these questions, which would simply be normal questions like, well, how are you going to survive? What skills do you have that people would buy? How would you talk in a given situation so as to bring it the right way to for everybody? How would you handle an employer? These are just total, they don't know what you're talking about. You try to talk to them about their immediate circumstances. Have you ever tried this? This fellow is married to a girl and she disappears every night and weeks at a time and never has much to do with her and so forth, and yet she runs up bills and draws on his bank account and so forth. And you say to this fellow, well, now, what steps would you take? What steps would you take to resolve this given situation? And he looks at you as though you're daffy. You mean this situation could be resolved? That's not within his ken of inspection. It is not within his zone of cognition. He doesn't have a cognition zone like that. Do something about it. Think about it. Confront it. Recognize it. That's what you're asking him to do, you see. Take responsibility for it. Oh, what are all these things? Take responsibility for what she does? Well, I can't take any responsibility for her. I mean, what she does is what she does, and what I do is what I do, and it's entirely separate, and she's got me totally caved in, and so forth, and victim, 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 victim. Yeah, you say, well, what are you going to do about the situation? But I don't have to do... Who expects me to do anything about the situation? I'm the one who's being hurt. It's like asking somebody who's being hit over the head with a club, why don't you roll aside 2 or 3 feet so you won't be hit over the head with a club? And he says, what 2 or 3 feet? He's begun to believe that it's his lot to lie there and be hit over the head with a club. Well, if it's his lot to lie there and be hit over the head with a club, there, of course, is no space or condition anywhere that isn't being hit over the head with a club. Correct? No space any place that is not occupied also by a hit over the headness with a clubness. You're asking him to recognize that other states exist when he is so fixated on his own state that he knows very well that it is the only state there is. And what he thinks you're asking him to do while you're processing him is to abandon all of his beingness, which is all the beingness there is. He thinks you're asking him to cease to exist. There obviously is no other beingness than the beingness he is in. Now, when a person has a chewed-up time track, and when he himself has been victimizing and being victimized, back and forth, give and take, his own fixations upon valences, his own difficulties, and so on, have assembled themselves into a personality package than which there is no other. You see, because it's totally made up out of attention fixation, he really hasn't a chance of recognizing, not a chance of recognizing, that there could be any other state of beingness. It's rather pathetic. You jump into a Roman slave pen and say, come on, slaves, strike off your chains, be free, and so forth. Well, you and I know intellectually that, of course, they're just waiting for somebody to unlock the gates, you know, and strike off the chains and walk out and assume natural existences. And all we'd have to do is just jump into the slave pen and say, well, strike off your chains, slaves. Here we go, you see. They say, who's this nut? They'd say, is there any other state of existence besides slavery? Well, that would be the leading and advanced question that they would start to cognite on. Just suspecting that there was any other state than the state they were in. Up to that time, the thought has never occurred to them that there was any other state. Never occurred to them. They said, slave, slave. You eat like a slave, you drink like a slave, you sleep like a slave, you work like a slave. A slave is a slave, and there are slaves, and then there are guards, and then there are masters, and there are slaves and guards and masters, and the three states of beingness are slaves and guards and masters, and the Holy Trinity, and bread and blood, and crosses, naturally. If you did anything, you got crucified, So if you got crucified, why, that proved it, and there are slaves and guards and masters. And if you work well, you get bread. And sometimes you get lamb. Once in a great while, when they expect endurance out of you. Total horizon. This total horizon. Every once in a while, why, in our modern society, they let somebody out of a prison. And he walks outside, walks in a small circle, and can't stand it. And they want to know why they have a repeating prison population? Well, these fellows go out and pick up a brick and throw it through the window just so they can get back to a natural state of being a prisoner. They know there's no other state, and they've been ejected into the world, into another state, and they can't rest. They have to rob and get caught, or they have to commit a crime, which puts them back to a more natural state of beingness, which, of course, is that of being a prisoner. You know, there's some reason for a consistent and continual repetition of prison terms. And that, more or less, is it. The individual is already thoroughly indoctrinated into a long line of being a prisoner. And there isn't anything else than being a prisoner. And how do you get to be a prisoner? Well, you commit a crime, and they'll make you a prisoner gratuitously. And then you can be a natural person, which is a prisoner. If you try to argue with such a person, in prisons they call these fellows more or less stir-crazy. Well, that's when it becomes visible. Actually, a lot of them in there are really stir-crazy without knowing it. And you say to this fellow, so and so, and he gives you some kind of an intellectual response about, boy, it'd really be great to be out there, you know, and be free, and it'd really be great to be out there and be able to walk into a pub and have a beer and go anywhere you want to and do anything you want to in the society, and gee, that'd really be great. And if he were to open that door and leave that door wide open, he wouldn't take one foot pace outside of it. Why? The terrific responsibility of earning your daily bread. Keeping clothes on your back. Keeping a roof over your head. Keeping in good graces with your fellow man. Having to actually think up a daily routine for yourself. Having to think up amusements for yourself. Where to go and what to do. Having to be original in conversation in any way. All of these things are totally beyond this prisoner's responsibility level. He could not be responsible for any of these things. So naturally, every time he's let into a zone where this freedom becomes apparent, he turns around and goes back into the prison. It's a hard thing maybe to envision, but if you're going to understand man, you have to understand this. The slaves don't love their chains. That is not correct. That is a piece of balderdash. But slaves can be so indoctrinated into chains that they cannot envision any other state. The Russian goes almost mad listening to the Western civilization's constant campaign over radio and in other ways. People in Russia say, well, what would happen if they actually got people to believing there was a decent life? What would happen? They'd strike off their chains. We wouldn't be able to keep them in line. We wouldn't be able to do this. We wouldn't be able to do that. We couldn't make production units out of these things. But those people that are saying this sort of thing, commissars, actually would not know how to live unless they themselves were living as commissars. They can envision no other state of beingness than the state of beingness in which they're in. Now, this isn't limited to the aberrated socialisms of today. Rather, the psychotic socialism, such as communism, they're merely aberrated socialism, such as democracy. And it goes pretty nuts when you get down into communism. A equals A equals A equals A. That's the population you're dealing with. It isn't limited to that. It's limited to practically every fixed state of a society. It gets to a point where it cannot envision any other state. And when it gets to that state, it ceases to survive. It is prey to all the ills there are. It never as-is any of them, does it? You say, why doesn't the United States government and the Russian government and the Patagonian government and the government of the Missouri River Blackfeet and other great nations get together and figure out something and do something else than attack each other or shake sabers or shake muskets or rockets or whatever plaything they're monkeying with now. Why do they keep in this fixed state of there must be war? Certainly there are men around who realize that there's some other state than war. Well, war is a terrifically survival valence for a government, and don't think that it isn't. What's totally in charge during a war? Well, what's the ideal mechanism to have everybody there saluting flags with both hands and listening to martial music and weeping about the fatherland and so forth? Well, who's kingpin in a war? Not a private, nor a general, a government. That's the winning valence of a government. Everybody gets down into worship. They can execute anybody if they dare even think a cross thought about the government. You know that this man this morning, when he got out of bed, thought a thought that it might be possible that Greater Patagonia might not win this war against Lesser Patagonia? He thought this thought, well, we'll just have to hang him. It can dramatize every brute level that it has. These governments just go nuts trying to figure out how to get into another war. Because that's the natural state. That's the most successful state for a government. Do you realize if you had international peace from pole to pole on the Sunday-Monday line, all around to the Sunday-Monday line again, that nobody would have any use whatsoever for a national government anyplace? Nobody'd know what to do with one. Do you realize that? Because a national government, basically, is a protection against aggressors from other states. And if there were no aggressors from other states,
People would start paying their taxes where they usually pay their taxes anyhow, which is to the city or the county, to make roads or schools. It's quite remarkable. And yet the speech I'm giving you is not a revolutionary speech at all. Not at all. I'm not trying to do anything, but just say, look over there, folks, and examine that situation for a moment. That there are fixed states of beingness which get everybody in trouble, which are looked upon by an aberrated look as being totally winning valences. Now, what's the totally winning valence? Epilepsy. Yeah, valence that has epilepsy totally wins. Nobody can do a thing about it. Anybody who comes near an epileptic is liable to get his neck broken or his hands crushed or anything like that. You know, the epileptic's never responsible for the situation and doesn't really have to work. Nobody trusts him on the job. He becomes in charge of the state and gets out of military service. And there's terrific valence. Boy, you can almost see some valence thinking and thinking and thinking. Now, how can I get into something as bad as or worse than an epileptic state? Now, how do I get an epilepsy going? Get the idea? Only it isn't that thinkingness. It is merely observation of winningness. And people keep coming back to this observed state. They say, that was the state that won. What they're looking to have happen is have an automatic perpetuation. Automatic. In which they will have no role or part. They won't have to take any responsibility whatsoever, but they just sail on down the time track, you see. They don't have to do anything to go on living. This takes care of it all. Everything takes care of it all. They'd have to take responsibility for the amount of imagination necessary for food, clothing, shelter, labor, social status, and everything else in a society which was totally flexible. Think if you had to invent a beingness for any given situation. Think if you had to invent the best possible beingness for any given situation and invent it every time. Actually, it would not even be tough. But that's what people are shuddering away from. They're trying to take a beingness which is a good beingness for all good and given situations for all ages, which will be the perfect beingness which will last forever. And I got news for them. There ain't no such animal. And any time they try to buy this perfect beingness, they're going to wind up souped, broiled, fried, ditched. You might even say that a definition for aberration or madness would be a fixed beingness, which never, under any circumstances, changed. This all by itself would be a crazy beingness, because there'd be certain situations in which it was crazy. I'll give you an example. There's a bus driver. He drives a big coach. And he knows how to start, and he knows how to stop. And he knows how to turn corners, and he knows how to follow a route. And he starts, and he stops the right signals and places, and he follows the route, and he comes back, and he starts and stops and follows the route, and he comes back to the point of start, and he starts and stops and follows the route and goes back to the point of start. Well, do you know that he does it because he can't do it? That sounds mighty weird, but that's why he's doing it on an aberrated level. He can't do it. The proof of it is you try to run op pro by dupe on this bus driver, and he'd practically go round the bend. A repetitive action is something he cannot tolerate, and he has been overwhelmed by a repetitive action. Now let's simplify this whole thing. We can talk all we want to about the philosophic questions that man faces, and all we find out is that man doesn't know that he faces these philosophic questions. He speculates on them very poorly, and he does not envision a beingness, ordinarily, which lies outside the beingnesses which he readily observes. He readily observes these beingnesses. He says there are no other beingnesses. Some fine day, another beingness suddenly jumps up and eats him up, skin and bone and hymn book too. And he says, where'd that come from? He had it all taped. Well, you haven't got it all taped short of being able to tape anything. If you can tape anything, you've got it all taped. But if you're automatically taping everything, you've got it all taped, you see, and abandon the ability to tape anything, you've got nothing taped. Then any beingness, which is the least bit out of the ordinary, can jump along and eat you all up. No, there are horizons. And I'm afraid the entrance point of man's betterment is his basic realization of the simple principle that when a man has lived all his life in a small bowl of the hills, it becomes difficult for him to imagine that there's another side to the same hills. That there are any broader fields elsewhere, or any contour or terrain any different from the contour or terrain he occupies. Why? Why? An aberrated man is a composite of the worst part of all the things that have overwhelmed him. An aberrated man is a composite of the most aberrated part of all the things that overwhelmed him. A gruesome look, isn't it? Composite of all the things that have overwhelmed him. That's grim, you know. How does he get into a position where he cannot change? He cannot change to the degree that he cannot reach. Now, here are two factors, actually, that you've never seen combined before. But they do combine. The ability to change and the ability to reach. When an individual is totally reached, he is no longer able to reach what he has become. When an individual is totally reached, when he has been totally reached, he is unable to reach now what he has become. Therefore, he's incapable of changing it at first glance. There's no possibility that he could change it. Well, let's take this fellow who's just been hit in the chest with a cannonball. He's been totally overwhelmed by a cannonball, hasn't he? Well, he's certainly in no shape to reach cannonballs. And the one thing he will tell you, if you ask him for a flash answer as his head flies off, you say, give me a flash answer as his head flies through the air, and you go alongside of it. And you say, name the most overwhelming thing in the world. And he'd say, cannonball. And you'd say, name the one thing you cannot change anything about, and he'd say, ha, a cannonball. And you'd say the one thing which has total survival, and he'd say, oh, cannonball. He knows all the answers. That's what he thinks. The actual sensation goes right along with him. I know all the answers to everything, everywhere. Cannonball. Now, you tell some girl sometime, in a conversational way, ah, dames ain't so smart. There's nothing much to dames. They got lots of liabilities. And boy, they'll give you an awful argument in favor of women. And a girl comes up to a guy and she says to a man, and she says, men are no good, they are all alike. They get it. She'll get an awful argument from a man. And isn't it funny that the girl who was arguing back or the man who was arguing back are both talking through their hat and neither of them believe it at all. They are basically talking from overwhelmed viewpoints. They are totally defending the one thing that overwhelmed them. This is obviously the basic answer to it all. To a woman, the basic answer is obviously being a woman. To a man, obviously, the basic answer is being a man. And this is so much true that men are walking around who don't know their men, and women are walking around who don't know their women. Quite remarkable. No wit intended. It's quite remarkable. Just like the prisoner walks around in his cell and he never realizes that he's ever been jailed. That's a natural place to be, in a cell. So does man inhabit all manner of traps. with no slightest suspicion that there's anything outside these traps different than these traps. This is quite wonderful. He's a victim of gravity. And yet he's the first one to tell you that gravity is natural. The seemingly most intelligent and enlightened forces on Earth today are the forces of science. And what are the forces of science telling us? Simply that the last umpteen dozen generations of thinking men have been totally overwhelmed in trying to fathom the laws of the physical universe and have been totally overwhelmed by them and therefore defend them utterly. Which makes them totally true. Gravity. If you were to tell somebody, it is not necessarily true that when you step off the edge of a building, you fall to the ground. The first one to laugh at you would be an, quote, enlightened, unquote, scientist. He's, ha, 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 oh, poor guy. You shouldn't laugh at him. You should cry. You mean this fellow can't envision stepping off the edge of the building and not falling to the ground? As a matter of fact, he can't. You say, get a mock-up stepping off the edge of the building, if he could get a mock-up, which he usually can't, and the mock-up will fly straight to the ground. It's as easy as that. That's what's supposed to happen. And law becomes a series of now I'm supposed to's. When one steps off the edge of the building, one is supposed to splatter himself on the ground. I'm supposed to, you see. Now, all of these valences, aberrated or sane or however you want to classify them, are simply a composite package of now I'm supposed to's, without inspection. And some of these now I'm supposed to's are so silly that I wonder how anybody ever got them to buy the trick. Let's take the thing of death. If certain things happen, you're supposed to die. Well, what is dying? Dying is to lie down or fall down or something like that and exteriorize and go someplace else. Well, look, that doesn't follow the definition because you didn't die. Now, let's look this over. Now, what is dying? Dying is falling down or collapsing and blowing out of your head and going someplace else. Yeah, but no, wait a minute. If it's going someplace else, then you didn't die, did you? So you didn't play the game. So if you didn't play the game, naturally you'd have to come as close to playing the game as possible. So you have to pretend utterly you were dead and not even remember you have been alive in order to have any further life beyond the point where you died. Sound crazy to you? Well, it's sure that crazy. It's just a now I'm supposed to gone mad. Now I'm supposed to lie down and play dead. How can a Thetan lie down and play dead? Well, he can lie down and play dead. But to be dead, it's not even in his Thetan vocabulary. There really is no such thing as being dead. So he goes around with wonderful philosophic conundrums. What is death? Is there life after death? Do I dare think the thought that I really don't die at all? Do I dare think this thought? No, I better not think this thought. Because all the survival valences that ever overwhelmed me thought that there was death, so I better say there was death too. I better not be different because it'll be painful. Because I'm overwhelmed. The common denominator of any case, philosophically, basically, elementarily, or any other way, is simply that. Overwhelmedness or inability or failure to be cause. Those things over which the individual cannot be cause are those things which the individual himself cannot envision. If he can't be cause over something, he can't even see it. Can't even see it. He can't even envision there's anything else than it. This fellow who is unhappily married cannot envision a state which envisions no marriage. You say, why does he keep at it this way? And when you jump into the Roman arena and say, slaves, strike off your chains, they generally strike off your head because they know there's no such thing as freedom. No such thing as freedom. Slavery has totally overwhelmed them. They bought it absolutely and utterly. Well, how did they ever buy this? How did they ever buy these beingnesses? Well, they were bought by a gradient scale. A little bit, plus a little bit, plus a little bit, plus a little bit, eventually got them into a condition where they could be overwhelmed. Little by little by little by little. And you can walk them back out of it again the same way. Oh, you say, it couldn't have been anything like a sudden, savage. I mean, it couldn't have been a slow overwhelmingness because cannonballs go bang. Oh, man, the difficulty of building up a series, a gradient series of postulates which add up to actually being hit as a thetan is about the trickiest piece of structure you ever saw. Graduating up to the point of actually being there to be hit by a cannonball and to be hit suddenly and savagely is about the most careful process of build-up you ever inspected. And it's all in gradients. Nothing savage and sudden ever happened to a thetan. It was all by gradients. To get into any kind of trouble, he had to walk into it an inch down at a time. Therefore, he comes out of it the same way. The only thing I repeat, in spite of all these conundrums I've been throwing at you, the only thing it is necessary to resolve in any case is get him from being effect to cause. Just get him to change his mind on that one subject, on any valence or beingness or overwhelmingness, and you've got it made. If your PC is not winning, and recall a time you have been responsible for, it's merely because he can't envision the terminal that he's trying to be responsible for. Or he can't envision, if he's not succeeding on confront, he can't envision the terminal for confront. He needs some help to envision any other terminal than the terminal he's totally and always fixed on. You have to pick up some terminal that he has some inkling of and improve his reality on that terminal so that recall responsibility, recall confront, where a case is consistently bogging and miring and so forth, is remedied every time by supplying a terminal which obviously he has some prayer of getting from effect to cause on. That's it. You just find something that has kind of overwhelmed him a lot, you know, but visibly, he can understand that it has too. You don't set him at a point of case where he cannot envision anything anywhere. You set him at this point of case where he can envision that there's a possibility that some other beingness exists and cure him of it. Find, in other words, a button by assessment. Now, that button that registers on the E-meter and changes its pattern is something that has overwhelmed him quite a bit. And the only thing necessary to change his attitude, to broaden his horizon, restore to him some of the freedom of choice, beingness, and view that he should have, is to bring him into a state of mind where he can be causative toward this thing which formerly he has been totally the effect of. You have to find out, then, some gradient scale of effect. And any process you use, you find something that the individual can envision, at least somewhat. A little bit. You'll find that he's been the effect of it, and then you get him to reverse it and become cause over this thing, which formerly has been cause over him. You just reverse that role. And any process that does this is a good process. But when an individual is not gaining on a process, it is because he is being left floundering. You either have furnished him a terminal that he cannot envision, or you furnished him no terminal at all. When you furnished him no terminal at all, there's nothing for him to go up against. There's nothing for him to differentiate from. There's nothing for him to walk away from or do anything else with. He said, there is no other beingness than the beingness which I am. So how could I possibly be responsible for something? It'd just be me, and I'm just me, and I'm just, of course, solid lead, but there isn't anything else. And we just left him to flounder. Now, we've got to find something that might possibly penetrate his imagination, if not his view. as a possibility, and that something will vary the pattern of an E-meter every time. So just pick a terminal that varies the pattern of the E-meter, run such process as the communication process, or the overt withhold straight wire process against it, find something else, run maybe responsibility against that particular terminal, such as, what aged old hag have you been responsible for? Got the idea? Or recall a time you were responsible for an aged old hag. Not just recall a time you've been responsible. You've got to give them a terminal because their imagination is too pauperized to recognize any beingness outside the beingness that they are actually sitting in and operating in. All you're trying to do is reverse cause, distance, effect with the PC at effect to cause, distance, effect with the object or thing that has overwhelmed the PC, now at effect, and the PC, now at cause over it. And the way you do that is to get practice in emanation toward it and pour off of it the belief in consequences for being at some other position than effect. It works every time. Now, let's not flub cases. It's too easy. All you have to do is find something the PC can see and put him at cause toward it. And you've made your grade every time, and you can make your grade by gradients. You won't do it all at once. After all, your PC is not a cannonball, even if you think he is. Thank you.